all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, July 6th. It is National Fried Chicken Day. It is International Kissing Day. And coming up this hour, I know the term is cradle to grave, but we're going to go with from cradle to college, conservative non-support. There are plenty of Wisconsin politicians eager to make life a bit worse from cradle to college. Scott Ross is going to take us through the fight to tame student loan debt and the recent setback by conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court. Then at the bottom of the hour, in our hometown health segment, a postpartum doula will join Dr. Kristen Lyerly to talk about the benefits of extending women's post-pregnancy health care through Medicaid. And again, the latest setback by conservatives, this time in the Wisconsin legislature, on that front. If you'd like to join the show, 844-967-2789 is the phone number. The email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. We were going to stick to serious subject matters with Scott Ross in this hour. We will get to them eventually. We did not finish our conversation on what is arguably an equally important matter to, you know, the global state of happiness, and that, of course, would be Yacht Rock. So Scott Ross is here. One of the few reasons I stayed on Twitter this long. So please, Scott, as I mentioned last hour, please tell me you're going to be migrating over to Threads as well, so that I don't have to monitor two platforms anymore.
Well, let me just say a couple things. Okay. There's a lot there. One, the broadcast later in the day. How dare Dr. Lyerly and women think this radical notion that they have the same rights as, you know, men folk like you and I.
Right.
The other thing is, I created a Threads account. I don't know what I'm going to do. I know that, you know, TweetDeck, you know, proves there is nothing that, you know, it's that joke of like, why is Mrs. Elon always on top? Well, because Elon can only screw up. But like, you know,
TweetDeck was wonderful. It was, he showed up and just burned the platform to the ground.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, and that's the thing that about Threads, because it's not like Zuckerberg, you know, other than,
oh, he's no angel. No.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like he's not, you know, a Nazi Nepo, apartheid, yeah, emerald mine heir. But like he, you know, he helped, you know, he's one of the major reasons that we ended up having Trump.
Right.
You know, that and, you know, tens of millions of racists, they don't need this platform. Like neither one of them benefits from having a fully functioning platform, because mm-hmm. it is a vehicle in which their ridiculousness and the failure of their corporate, you know, mechanisms, machinations, whatever you want to say, is best publicized by those platforms. So they want one that like they can make money off of, but they don't want it to work too well, in my opinion.
Right. And they'll ruin Threads at some point, just like they've ruined Twitter and you know, the Facebook, what they did in 2016 through Cambridge Analytica. I get all
that. Well, I mean, we're routing it through Instagram. Like have an Instagram account that's not the same as my Twitter account, because I lost the password to my old Instagram. I have like, you know, 20, I follow like 20 people because it's just not my thing. I don't want this, you know, pictures of my face to be like the vehicle in which like I communicate, because that's, you know, leading with your chin literally, and in my case, a really bad way. So,
all right. Well, I will be looking for you there anyway, in the hopes of that. All right. We were discussing Yacht Rock last time around, and I did not have a chance to go to my favorite website title so far this week, a Yacht Rock quiz. I can go for that. See what they did there? Little Hall and Oates.
There you go.
So we got time for a couple of questions. Then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk seriously about student loan debt. All right. This seminal Yacht Rock album took 2 years to record and was the most expensive record ever made at the time it was released in 1980. Is it the Doobie Brothers' The Captain and Me, Toto's Four, or Steely Dan's Gaucho?
I'll say Toto's Four.
It was Steely Dan's Gaucho. Yeah. All right. Which of the following artists is not considered a yacht rocker? Is it Robbie Dupree, Boss Skaggs, Jackson Brown?
Well, let me just say this, that's crazy that that's your question, because I was driving to another radio station affiliated with your network yesterday, and the traffic was terrible, and I had on I just had my Apple on shuffle, and I got Robbie Dupree's Key Largo, which I think is the embodiment of like yacht rock, because it's really a terrible, terrible, unlistenable to song if you listen to the lyrics.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's Bertie Higgins is Key Largo. Robbie Dupree is Steal Away.
No, I will disagree with you, because I've listened to Key Largo. I mean, it was there. It was up on the, you know, it was on my thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'll show you my phone, Pat. Don't go to the mattresses with me on this one, you know. But anyhow. Yeah, I'll just claim whatever. My house was a Motown house. Like my, you know, late 1960s parents were like Motown. But then my dad lost his job in the steel mill in 81, and we became a country music house. So when we had the revitalization of country with Garth Brooks, like, and I was in college, it sent a shiver in my spine, because I associated that with like poverty and my parents crying.
Getting back to the question now, Robbie, sorry. It's Jackson Brown who is not considered.
Yes, that was what I would have said.
Yacht rock. The other 14 questions we're going to save for sometime when I can have you on for another full hour. We're going to talk student loan debt and get your forecast from Weatherology and the Brewers Cubs from last night. All just ahead on this Thursday morning on Up North News Radio. We'll be back. We were discussing apparently Apple Music is the, we're not going to blame Scott Ross for this one, but it was Bertie Higgins who did Key Largo, not Robbie Dupree. So somebody at Apple Music not up to speed on their yacht rock. Don't let the young people program the music. We're going to talk more about student loan debt with Scott Ross. We'll move away from the yacht rock here in just a second. But first, I've got some sports to tell you about. The Brewers and Cubs. For the second time this season, we watched the once unstoppable Devin Williams give up key hits in a save situation. A 3-run ninth inning allowed the Cubs to beat the Brewers last night 4-3. Willie Adames hit his 13th homer. Freddy Peralta will get the start in game 4 this afternoon as the Brewers try to salvage a split from the series. The Cincinnati Reds come to town tomorrow night to start a weekend series, and then we have the All-Star break after that. So you can catch the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM throughout the Fox Valley, and over in Richland Center. It is News from the Center on WRCE 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. And we will get our forecast from either Jennifer or Michael at Weatherology in a little bit, once they're able to join us, and then Hometown Health is coming up at the bottom of the hour. Scott Ross is back with us now, and when for the many years that he was the executive director at One Wisconsin Now, one of the signature issues was student loan debt. They were among the very first in the country to call attention to just what a mammoth mountain and an economic impediment it had become. You finally get somebody in the White House in Joe Biden who recognizes that, tries to do something about it, and then you get the decision, the setback that you got at the U.S. Supreme Court. In the least colorful terms you can use, how did you take the Supreme Court decision rolling back the student loan debt relief?
Well, the United States Supreme Court is an illegitimate body at this point. And so I expected an illegitimate decision, which is exactly what the 45 million student loan borrowers in the United States and their families and the people who would like them to participate in the economy got. You know, it's a raw deal. It's ridiculous. You know, and I am no attorney, but, you know, if we can forgive $800 billion in PPP loans, I don't understand why we can't forgive $10,000 per person in student loan debt. And you know, and I guess that would extend to the economy here. I mean, again, we know that on April 11th, 2020, the taxpayers forgave multimillionaire Robin Voss's $297,600 student or a PPP loan. And again, I don't know how giving a multimillionaire $300,000 somehow helps our economy, but not helping people, not giving people help to fully participate in the economy, that being the student loan borrowers, how, you know, not supporting them. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Student loan debt borrowers were not asking for a handout. They were not asking for special treatment. They were simply being asked to be treated for once fairly in an economy that has treated them completely and totally unfair because of the way in which higher education, including tech college, has been denuded in terms of its funding over the years, and how the burden has been put on student loan borrowers who, you know, borrow into a system where they have none of the consumer protections that are afforded every other commercial transaction in the United States.
Did the Biden administration and the legal beagles who defended this case, did they make a mistake in not packaging this the way that One Wisconsin now did early on, that this is a massive economic stimulus package for the middle class, as opposed to just being able to say, well, I paid my loans, why don't they pay their loans? There was a reason behind this, and it was very much driven in trying to help an economy that was being dragged down by the pandemic.
Well, that was one of those things. I don't know that legally, I mean, that's, you know, good policy isn't necessarily a legal argument. I appreciate what you're saying, Pat, because that was the thing when we first started doing we did our first post about student debt back in 2008. And we started by saying, like, asking ourselves and our peers, you know, what are the things that you're being denied an ability to purchase as a result of student debt? And it turns out that the two biggest, you know, drivers of our economy, home purchasing and new car purchasing, are specifically denied to people who have student loan debt because they're unable to do it. It's like, you know, if you have a student debt, you're like twice as likely to have a used car as opposed to a new car, and you're twice as likely to rent or live with someone else than having that embodiment of the American dream, that being a home of your own. And, you know, I think the biggest mistake that I don't think that Biden made the big mistake. I'll straight up, the biggest mistake that was made was cowardly elected officials all over this country who refused to fully embrace the idea that the president was saying we need to forgive some student debt to make this, you know, helpful. And because, you know, Democrats got cowardly in the face of, you know, morons saying, well, why should we pay for someone else's stuff? Pat, we pay for people's stuff all the time. You know, I pay for public schools. I don't have any kids, you know, but I went to public school. You know, we pay for farming subsidies. I'm not a farmer, although my mom was. You know, like, we pay for stuff as a society all the time. We pay for, you know, the law enforcement that helps protect the assets of the 9 billionaires that the state legislature tried to give $2 million to in the last budget, that thankfully Governor Evers vetoed that part of it. You know, so I just disagree, like, that this one place, again, Pat, you have to remember, every single thing that was done in order to get us to this point, first and foremost, you know, we privatized Sally Mae under the Clinton administration because Clinton wanted to have more Pell Grant money, and the Republicans who controlled Congress said, well, yeah, we can do that, but you have to, you know, privatize, you know, Sally Mae. Then under Bush, we took any final protections in terms of bankruptcy away from student loan debt. So basically, we created a system where if you take out a student loan in the United States of America, Pat, you're going to pay for that, or you're dead, you know, or when you're dead, your kids are going to pay for it. And as a result of that, they, you know, the banks are like, we can, you know, lend as much money to people, the federal government, we can lend as much money to people as we want, because they are going to have to pay it back no matter what. And they're going to pay an exorbitant amount of interest on it. So it's just, you know, it's just patently false to pretend like student loans are somehow just like everything else, because they are drastically, dramatically different than every other thing. And like a lot of the, you know, boomers who we started talking about student debt were like, well, when I went to college, I worked, you know, not all, but a lot, you know, are now like, well, I paid my loan, why don't you have to? Well, you know, let's not forget that, like, you know, up until like not too long, you know, in the last like 30 years, you basically got paid to go to college, you know, in the United States, because we wanted people to go to get higher education and technical college training, because we knew that that's what helped in many ways make America function as a democracy, function as a world power economically. And we've taken that away because we want to give, you know, tax breaks to rich people, because that's what Republicans do.
Well, let's get right to it then. That is the crux of it, is look, we have forgiven loans. You just mentioned PPP. Republicans were happy to do that because it was for the business class. And why do we provide tax breaks to the very wealthy? Because again, they're in the business class. Why don't more people just straight up call this what it is? It's an anti-university, anti-higher education bias. This has very little to do with the numbers. And I paid my loan back, so they should pay theirs back. There has been this almost generation-long bias where all we're hearing now is not everybody has to go to college. And that's true, but it's said in such a way as to make it acceptable to cut the UW system budget at a time of a $7 billion surplus. And yet it's still not fashionable for people to say, it's not fashionable for people like me to say, you guys just hate college and universities because you think that higher education has a liberal bias.
But I mean, Pat, like the pie, I mean, just as much, I mean, the number of people going to tech college in Wisconsin who can't get financial aid. I mean, it's like 30,000 eligible students every year are denied financial aid to go to, you know, to go to places like technical college because of the way we have dramatically underfunded education. And I'll give you a great example of this. Pat, in 1990, 10 cents of every general purpose revenue dollar in the state budget went to higher education. That is now down to like 2.5 cents 30 years later. And the, you know, obscenity of, for instance, correction spending that we put into the state budget. So it's just ridiculous. And we laid out $800 billion in PPP loans, and we've forgiven like something like 85% of those, including to, you know, members of Congress like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Nazi Green, and, you know, guys like Robin Voss, $300,000. And again, I, you know, I'm a comms guy for good or ill. And I just think, if you just remembered in 2022 in particular, how cowardly the Democrats were in terms of standing up for student debt, because their pollsters said, you know, their pollsters who, I've never met a pollster who had student loan debt in my life, you know, an established pollster out in D.C. And so as a result of them not having to deal with this economically, they don't understand that it's just, it's such a different issue, because you're economically, you know, indebted from the time you are like 18 until the time you're 50, you know, and it's not understanding the issue is why I think we've gotten so much terrible polling. And I, you know, we did polling for student debt back 10 years ago to try and figure out where people were at with it, because we wanted to be able to communicate with people about this issue in a place that we could meet them at. And the top thing that we found was that people supported, over 9 out of 10 voters supported the idea you should be able to refinance your student loan like you can a mortgage. And Pat, we had every single Democrat in the state legislature for 6 years co-author the student loan refinancing bill, and every single Republican voted against it every single time. Every member of Congress on the Republican side helped block student loan refinancing, which again has no fiscal cost. It just says that the, you know, you're going to get the rate that helps us pay for the administration of the program. We're no longer going to profiteer, because the federal government, for instance, in 2014, excuse me, made more off of student loans than ExxonMobil, the biggest corporation on planet Earth, made in profit, something like $45 billion. So it's just absurd. The problem is that student loan borrowers are fighting with one hand tied behind their back, because there, and I will just say it, there are so many Democrats who will not take on this issue. It didn't come up in the Senate race, for instance, the U.S. Senate race in, you know, that was here in the state. And I don't understand. People with student loan debt are most likely demographic to be voters. Why would you not try and communicate with them? It's insane.
I got just under a minute left. So just been asking, you know, where does this go from here? The Biden administration is looking at other avenues, but do you have any confidence that this issue can be advanced in the near term, or are we back to long range thinking on tackling this mountain of debt?
Well, I think it requires a little bit of relentlessness, and that's not something we always see. I mean, we hear about the maps, mm-hmm. you know, here in the state of Wisconsin. I'd like to hear more about student loan debt. It feels like, you know, ever since we went away at One Wisconsin, there's nobody talking about it. Gives me a big sad face. And I say that because, you know, I got student loan debt for 26 years. Mm-hmm. I made my final payment on my 44th birthday, and it was like being economically paroled. you know, because that was just sitting there.
I know. And again, you did a masterful job of educating me and others, but clearly there's a lot more folks we need to talk to about that and about music again sometime soon. Scott Ross, happy biking. Thanks for getting up early. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks a lot, Pat. I appreciate it. And keep up the great work.
All right. Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful day. When we come back, Kristen Lyerly and Kristen Quinn will join us in Hometown Health to talk about expanding Medicaid so that new moms up to a year out can have better health care. That's next. You're up north. All right, let's talk babies, babies and new moms. And of course, Dr. Kristen Lyerly has a lot to do with that as an obstetrician gynecologist. But as any good OBGYN would tell you, they don't do it alone. There's an entire support team there from, you know, nurses to, you know, people throughout the hospitals and clinics. There's doulas that we're going to be talking about today. And Kristen does so now for this week's Hometown Health. And we're going to tie in the Medicaid expansion that once again didn't happen in the new budget that got signed yesterday. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Let me tell you how I am for folks that missed the surprise birthday party that you threw for me yesterday. I'm still trying to get confetti out of my carpet and other places where it got tracked around yesterday. I was surprised. I was touched. But I'm also, my vacuum cleaner hates me right now because it's like, why don't you just spread some Easter grass around too and try to suck all that up? Good luck, you know, but.
I'm so glad that the confetti was actually your wife's concoction. Otherwise, yes, I'd be really feeling guilty right now.
Oh, when I told her about it, she said, you didn't use the whole bag, did you? And I was like, let's just use a little bit, but a little bit of confetti goes a long way. At least that stuff. All right, let's turn to Hometown Health now and let you introduce Kristen Quinn and how it plays into this week's topic.
Yeah, so this week I wanted to shine a little light on the fourth trimester. We know pregnancy has three trimesters, but really there's a fourth trimester, and that's the postpartum period. The pregnancy is not over when the baby comes out, not by a long shot. And in this fourth trimester, we think of it in this very blissful, happy way, like you go home with your new baby and your life is amazing. And that's true in, like, you know, periods of time and for many women, but 2/3 of deaths occur in the postpartum period, and 90% of those deaths are preventable. And let's be really honest, our society doesn't support postpartum moms and families very well. We don't have paid family leave. We don't have adequate breastfeeding support in our work environments, in our society. Even we don't have access to fundamental medical care. And in Wisconsin, the GOP took it out of the budget. It was there, expanding Medicaid to one full year after birth, and the GOP took it out. But all hope is not lost, because all five members of the Committee on Insurance and Small Business voted by paper ballot, they've got a record, that they wanted to pass this year-long extension. So that's a good thing. Unfortunately, Robin Voss wants to encourage people to leave Medicaid as soon as possible, so he wants to take it out. So we're one of only seven states that hasn't passed Medicaid expansion. And I think we need to talk more about the need for this essential healthcare. And nobody understands it better than someone who takes care of women in the postpartum period. Kristen Quinn, postpartum doula, welcome to Hometown Health.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about, maybe people haven't heard about what a doula is. So tell us about what a doula is and maybe specifically what a postpartum doula does.
Sure. So the generic kind of term for a doula is a trained professional who serves others in with guidance and support. So there are different types of doulas, and the main one that people usually think of is a birth doula, and they provide prenatal care for the moms and also care around the birth. More uncommon is the postpartum doula, and they provide care, obviously, in the postpartum, that fourth trimester. And what a postpartum doula does is after that hospital stay, well, actually during that hospital stay, you have a lot of support and a lot of resources. You have your doctors, you have your nurses, you have your lactation consultants, and so on to support you. But after you leave the hospital, that support and help gets drastically reduced. So that's where the postpartum doula comes in and kind of takes over in that support. And the postpartum doula can help you find resources if you need. And they help with feeding care, infant care, physical care, errands, light cleaning. One of the big things that they do is help with emotional care. And in our training, we were trained to recognize the signs of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So we definitely help moms find their way if we recognize those signs.
That's huge, because often people don't recognize when they're experiencing signs of postpartum depression. I mean, think about it. You go home from the hospital, you've got this new baby, you're not sleeping, maybe you're struggling with breastfeeding, maybe things are a little, hairy in your family because everything is turned on its head. So to have someone there who is an independent observer helping you figure out what's normal and what's not normal is incredibly valuable. Right. What kind of a family, who needs a postpartum doula like you?
I would say every mom would need that. I worked in OB as an RN I've been on the floor for 10 years, and I had one myself, because it's just, my husband went back to work and he is a great support system, but we just don't have the type of postpartum care that we need. Other developed countries have good set in systems where they have postpartum care, and it looks like they're thriving better than our country is.
Mm-hmm. I always think of doulas as back in the olden days when we had families that were home, and you would go home and maybe your parents were there, or you had siblings who could help out, or you had big families. So you had older siblings, that your child's older siblings who could pitch in. That's where the doulas really take over and can provide some of those services. And let's talk about a few of those services. You mentioned some of those things like light cleaning, running errands. Talk a little bit more about how you've been able to help some of the families that you've worked with as they're taking care of their own lives in the postpartum period.
So usually with the postpartum, we talk about home care when the moms and babies are back home, where we focus on the family too, the family as a whole. And it's not just in the home environment if the mom doesn't want. It's very personalized care for each mom of what they need. So if they want us to come to the hospital and support them there while they are in postpartum in the hospital, we can do that too. Or if mom delivers early and she has a NICU baby, we can go support that baby if she wants us to. We can come support her at home. We can help with pumping, just getting those initial things started for them.
So that gets us into the whole notion of how it gets paid for, because there is, there is health insurance coverage for those who can't afford it, or it's provided at work. But for many others, there is a need for the Medicaid program, which again helps prevent, from the financial side, prevents those, medical induced bankruptcies. And from a healthcare side, more stable, affordable healthcare coverage helps keep people healthy and alive. Kristen, Dr. Lyerly, can you start by explaining what is covered now through Badger Care Medicaid for only a certain amount of time? How much more time could be added to that coverage? I know you hinted at it earlier. And then we'll get into Bridget Quinn's, Bridget Quinn, Kristen Quinn. too many Kristens here. Kristen Quinns.
There aren't ever too many Kristens.
Talking about the benefits, the peace of mind, the health benefits that come to new moms when they know that they have stable, affordable coverage. But Dr. Lyerly, can you take us through the X's and O's of what Medicaid covers in Wisconsin right now?
Nearly half of births in Wisconsin are covered by Medicaid in Wisconsin right now. And that Medicaid coverage takes care of the entire prenatal course. So all of the care you receive up until the time that you have your baby, takes care of the delivery itself, and then 6 weeks of postpartum care. Last year, Governor Evers was able to sign a bill that would extend it for another few weeks, but really not enough. And that actually is caught up in the federal system right now. There's some talk about how they're not excited about going through all of the rigmarole of approving it, when really the goal and what every other 43 other states have expanded it to a full year of postpartum care. We know that women need one full year of postpartum care. So that's what we're going for here. And that's what women and families truly need and deserve.
And so, Kristen Quinn, when that doesn't happen, and we talked about the stresses that you see, but can you tell us a bit about, you know, what women are going through, what families are going through in terms of, you know, dealing with the healthcare coverage, the finances of it, and the impact that has on their health and their ability to properly care for newborns?
Right. So going into this business, I realized that there is no insurance coverage, at least that I'm aware of, unless you have really, really good insurance. So it is kind of a risk for me, even, because it's all out of pocket pay. So there's nothing to be covered, but it would be amazing to get that system in there for that coverage to be in place.
And we know that doula care does make a difference in the prenatal time for women who are at high risk. Having a doula to walk with you, to answer your questions, to advocate for you, to make sure that you feel cared for. I think we have a tendency to feel like healthcare is about visiting your doctor and getting a prescription, but really it's about making sure that all of those fundamental things are there so that you can be as healthy as possible. So that is a priority, making sure that, you know, people are well taken care of, and that's what doulas do.
So if you want people to take something away from, you know, today's conversation about both the healthcare, health insurance coverage, and the way that they take care of themselves, their health, and their babies, and that feeling that they're often doing it alone, what is it that you'd like people to take away from today's conversation?
For me, it would just be that that the care shouldn't end when the mom and baby go home from the hospital. That fourth trimester is a very much needed time for the care. And we just don't have that in place yet. And it just needs to be in place, because it actually decreases the risk of the perinatal mood disorders.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I wanted to share too. I mean, we had got this conversation started because you reached out to tell me about Fit Moms on the Move, which is a community organization in the Appleton area that does offer additional support beyond doula care. Do you want to talk a little bit about what Fit Moms on the Move does?
Sure. So, yes, I believe that community for moms is very important. So, the FMMA, which is Fit Moms Motherhood Alliance, focuses on classes for education for moms prenatally and postpartum, and also fitness classes for them prenatally and postpartum. They also, one big thing that I love about their group is that they provide like a directory resource of local businesses and professionals who moms can look up on that list. And whatever issues they're having, they can be like, oh, I need this. And they can look up at that directory. And this group has interviewed them and put them as a top person on that list. So moms have that resource to use.
And again, that website is fitmomsonthemove.com. /alliance will take you right there. FitMomsOnTheMove.com. Kristen Quinn, thank you so much for helping us learn more about the role of a postpartum doula, the benefits of having affordable, stable coverage that you can count on and care that you can count on. It was really nice to be able to talk to you. Thanks for being part of this week's Hometown Health.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's definitely our pleasure. Kristen, we normally would talk to one Luke Mathers. He was actually allowed to go on vacation this week, apparently. So you know, maybe you just want to hang around and we'll pick up on Yacht Rock where Scott Ross and I left off. You game? She's game. So
let's
all right,
do it.
Let's take a break. We'll be back after this here up north.
Back in baby's arms.
I was informed that you used to have a pom-pom routine to Rock Lobster, Dr. Lyerly.
Yeah, Catona High School in 1986. This was one of my faves.
How much of the moves do you actually remember?
Not very many.
Okay. I can tell, by the way, you're kind of doing the little shark, you know, with your hand going across. I'm like, that was not part of it. There would have been a pom-pom in your hand, obviously.
It was. We set our pom-poms down so that we could do that with our white gloves on.
Okay. So now, Kristen, Aaron, you want to pick up where we left off on I Can Go For That, a Yacht Rock quiz?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I just point out that I think that Scott Ross is a little embarrassed about his love for the song Key Largo by Bertie Higgins?
I think he feels so betrayed that Apple Music has lied to him all this time with a display. And he showed me the display. It says Robbie Dupree on there when that's wrong. It's Bertie Higgins. All right. We all know that we learned earlier today, the song that earned a perfect 100 on the Yacht or Nyacht scale is What a Fool Believes. Who co-wrote What a Fool Believes with Michael McDonald? Was it Carly Simon, Jim Messina, or Kenny Loggins?
Kenny Loggins.
It was Kenny Loggins. Very good.
Woo! Yes.
All right. Let's see. Who takes the number one position in the Women of Yacht Rock countdown? Is it Nicolette Larson, Diana Ross, Lauren Wood?
Nicolette Larson.
That was my guess too, but it's wrong. It's Lauren Wood, best known for her single Fallen, which was featured in the movie Pretty Woman. It also, of course, has background vocals from Michael McDonald. Let's see. Which of these Lionel Richie songs earned the highest score on the Yacht or Nyacht scale? Would it be All Night Long, Hello, or Running with the Night?
All Night Long.
No, Running with the Night. Sorry. Okay. This one's going to be just for Aaron because we're getting a little bit away from Yacht Rock. The Doobie Brothers were among the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 2020 inductees. Which of the following acts concurrently joined the Doobies that year? So the Doobie Brothers went into the Rock Hall of Fame 2020 along with, was it R.E.M., the Notorious B.I.G., the J. Giles Band?
I can't remember when Notorious B.I.G. got inducted, but I'm going to go with him.
Biggie is correct. Yes. So I'd had R.E.M. and I was completely wrong on that. Kristen, did you have that one?
That was a toss up for me.
Uh-huh. So this was, I'm not sure how long the Yacht or Nyacht scale has been around, but this was my first exposure to it, was getting set to do this and, realizing that the playlist is a lot bigger than I thought. And that's because the definition has kind of expanded over time, because otherwise you're kind of stuck with the same 20 songs, you know, and it's now hundreds and hundreds of songs that this group of Yacht Rock aficionados, nerds, weirdos, whatever you want to call it,
has given
you want to call it. So I'm going to give you, I'm going to go down to the 50-50 line here. Again, any score 50 or above is Yacht Rock. Anything below it is not considered Yacht Rock. And so let me see if I can find, we talked about Jackson Browne, Somebody's Baby, coming up just short at 49.75.
Disagree.
Captain and Tennille, Love Will Keep Us Together, Yacht or Nyacht?
It seems like it's early in the yacht rock era, but it has a yacht rock feel. So I'm going to go, I'm an all-inclusive, like all in. So I'm going to go yacht.
It was an early one, 1975, and with a score of 51.75. Yes, it qualifies as yacht rock.
Just barely.
On this scale. It is not on the Pat Kreitlow scale of yacht rock. No, that would not work. Here's Carla Bonhoff, personally. You remember that song? The chorus is like,
I'm giving
it to you personally.
Yeah.
Yacht rock or not? 1982.
Yeah, I'd go yacht rock.
No, 47.75 on the yacht rock scale here. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I mean, this should be a gimme, right? Boss Gags and the Lido Shuffle?
Mm-hmm. I would say yes.
No, 47.5.
But it's Boss Gags.
It's Boss Gags. I know. And that was that. Apparently, that is one of the great debates among yachtsters is Boss Gags included in Yacht Rock? And I'm like, how can it not be? That makes no sense.
Come on.
I know.
Did you get this scale? Is the scale validated?
No, it's not validated. It's the internet, Kristen. It's the internet.
I think our listeners need to send us their favorite yacht rock song so we can make our own yacht rock list.
I would love nothing more than if people either blew up the comment section or the phones with songs that are or are not their qualify as yacht rock. Because instead of quizzing, now I'm just going to rattle off a couple and you can react. The Joey Scarberry theme from The Greatest American Hero. There's no way that's yacht rock, and yet it gets a score of 56.25.
Feels yacht rocky to me, though.
Oh, I don't know. Let's see. We've got Toto, Hold the Line. Qualifies Toto. Kind of at the low end of it. Billy Ocean, Caribbean Queen. Now I hear that on some of the yacht rock channels all the time, but it says no with a 48.75.
That feels less.
Yeah, it does. So let me go back up to the top here. I'm just going to rattle off. Let's see. This is everybody with a score of 95 or above, which would be, let's see, there's seven of them. That would be Rosanna by Toto.
For sure.
Kenny Loggins, Who's Right, Who's Wrong? I've never been a fan of that song. Airplay, Nothing You Can Do About It? I'm not sure about that one either.
Now you're like to hear that one. Sometimes when you say the title, I don't know it, but when you play it, I'm like, oh, that one.
Yeah. Number four, counting our way up, Kenny Loggins, This Is It. Mm-hmm. A natural yacht rock tune.
We got a text of somebody else who loves Key Largo by Bertie Higgins.
And they,
I love it too.
They know that it's Bertie Higgins. Let's see. Number three would be Michael McDonald. I keep forgetting. And number two, Kenny Loggins, Heart to Heart. And number one, the Doobie Brothers, What a Fool Believes. So there, you got all those in there. And like I said, Annalise Eicher, who also worked at One Wisconsin Now, she every year makes a big deal of sharing her Spotify playlist of yacht rock tunes. And I'm not on Spotify, although you all could be, because then you could subscribe to this radio show as a podcast. Go to Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcast. But so I don't know what all is on her list, but I trust her with whatever she would want to share as some good summertime listening. But here now is Pat's dirty secret. Yacht rock for many people, it's a summertime thing. It's yacht rock. It's summer. I listen to it all year long.
I thought you said you were sharing a secret.
Aaron.
There was one point where I almost got you an easy button that would play Hall & Oates.
Oh no, you can't get an easy button that plays Hall & Oates because Dr. Kreitlow. And she waited till we were together like 20 years before telling me, not a Hall & Oates fan. And yet yesterday, we made it to our 37th wedding anniversary. So we got that going for us.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Kristen. Have a wonderful day. Aaron, thank you so much. Have a great Thursday, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow where it's another beautiful day.